That was easy. Easy.
My talks on Dora secondary architectures and enabling Dora to run everywhere.
Oh, that's true.
It's just going to cover over the work that Dora's been doing to enable people to run Fedora on whatever hardware they want. Kind of whatever scratches their own itch. Can everyone hear me okay?
Speak up a little.
So who am I? I'm Dennis Gilmore. I currently work for OOBC as the build and release engineer for them. I've been involved in Fedora for a long time. I look after the build system for Fedora. I have been a board member on the engineering steering committee, involved in a lot of different aspects of Fedora. So there's my contact information if anyone wants to drop me a line, ask me any questions. So what is a secondary architecture? Is it any architecture that's not mainstream? Is it just the fringe architectures? Is it anything that's not x86-64? For Fedora's purposes, we're saying that it's anything that is not x86 or x86-64. We have a special case where PPC is being built with the primary architectures, but release engineering is being done entirely by the Fedora community. But the rest of the architectures that are considered secondary architecture, other than those two. So why are we supporting secondary architectures? For one, it ensures that, hopefully it ensures that the code is portable. We're building on big Endian CPUs, little Endian CPUs, different instruction sets, and we're building the same code from the same CVS source repository across all of those architectures. So hopefully that means that the code is of a better quality because it's being tested in different areas. We could probably do the same thing by building everything on the same architecture, but using different kernels and different POSIX, making sure that things are POSIX compatible by using FreeBSD kernel and building everything on top of that. Could probably get the same thing. And it scratches people's itches. I personally like Spark architecture. Other people like other architectures. And one thing that Fedora is trying to do is be an enabler. Let people do what it is that they want to do. Making sure that we don't hurt that. So who is doing secondary architectures? There's a bunch of different people doing them. Right now, HP, Intel, and SGI, along with Red Hat, are doing Itanium. They're currently the ones that, they have the biggest head start on all the other architectures, and they're currently the one that's most ahead. It's still a new thing that is being ramped up where, slowly getting stuff up to speed. S390 is being done by Red Hat and IBM, and the interest for those people for doing Itanium and S390 is for real. To give them a good base and a solid knowledge that when they start building, when Red Hat starts building RHEL next, that the stuff should work on all the architectures that are supported by RHEL. Marvell's doing the work for ARM, and this Fedora community people are doing Spark and Alpha. At the moment, they're the architectures that we have, but there's, as it was in the keynote this morning, there's 25 odd supported architectures in the kernel. So there's plenty of room for extra architectures. If someone wants to do MIPS or someone wants to do PA RISC or something else that they like want to do, we're definitely wanting to let those people do that work. So how does secondary architectures work? Currently, all the way that we're doing it is all the packages are going to be built for the primary architectures first. That means that the most simple common bugs are going to get weeded out before they hit the secondary architecture hubs. Once the package has been successfully built on the primary architecture, it will get built on the secondary architecture and rebuilt in the sequence in which it was done on primary architecture, so that you get things like there's packages depend on particular versions of Zool Runner or Firefox, or if they're not built in the right order, they won't run. They might It's still open, they won't run, you know, with different API compatibilities and whatnot. So we're trying to make sure that everything is completely reproducible. You know, all the tools that we're using are free and open, and so you know, the plan is that it'll mimic what happens on other architectures. So the current workflow that is used is the on the primary architectures, the way it currently works is the package maintainer, he makes his changes in CVS. You know, edits his spec file, uploads his new tarballs, applies any patches he needs to do, commits that. He types make tag build, which sends off the request to Koji. Koji checks out, the build system checks out from CVS, makes a source RPM, builds it in a minimal tour, and then it succeeds or it fails. If it's either way, it an email notification sent out to the maintainer to say, your build's done, or your build failed. And then, you know, if it fails, the maintainer has to go off, work out why, and fix it. So the thing that we're going to put in is put in a piece of glue that looks at that build, you know, success or failure, and if it succeeds, reproduce that build. Make sure that we have the same things, you know, built in the same order. We're, you know, aiming for reproducibility of the So if you want to run that secondary architecture, what resources do you need? You need a lot of disk. Right now, for Fedora 9, in the Fedora 9, there's 20,000 packages built, which amounts, there's currently about 6,000 packages in source packages in Fedora CVS. So that's nearly every package was built nearly four times during the Fedora 9 lifecycle. And the amount of packages that Fedora has grows every week. I think it's probably at 20 to 30 new packages every week get added to Fedora CVS that, you know, go through the review process and, you know, get added into the repository. So building all that needs a lot of disk. You need a web server that's publicly accessible so that people can look at their build logs, access the Koji Hub, you know, just scratch. It's also, you know, used for doing things like scratch builds, which I'll go into with Koji a little bit. You need the database server. The web server and database server can be on the same machine. It's kind of, it's very resource intensive, so if you've got a single CPU machine that you're going to use as your hub, you're not going to be able to run the web server, the database server on the same machine. It'll bring it to a halt in about 10 minutes. And lots of builders. You know, there's, you know, in the 6 months of Fedora 9 development, 20,000 packages built. It takes a lot of, you know, CPU disk cycles to get that built. And you need lots of bandwidth. The current Fedora 9 Spark Tree, which is almost complete, is about 26 gig. So when you go to upload, you know, new trees, uploads ISOs, upload, you know, all that stuff, you need a lot of bandwidth. And people, hopefully, you know, interested in your architecture as well, and download, you know, RPMs from you, and, you know, test things out, build things. So you need lots of bandwidth, and ideally sandbox machines as well. So the people that Fedora contributors that don't have that hardware but are willing to help you with your architecture, it gives them a resource where they can log in, use mock, use the tools to test builds, see if, you know, work out why things are not building, you know, provide a sandbox area where people can try and help you fix the bugs that, you know, you come across. The secondary architecture team is responsible for ensuring that everything gets built. But, you know, Fedora, the contributors are recommended that they help. Some of them will, some of them won't. But, you know, a lot of them will help as long as, you know, you give them a little help to help, you know, help you. And Fedora provides resources for, you know, the secondary architecture team. They provide the package CVS where everything lives. It gives you the control base to start, you know, everything from. Provide user authentication. You know, Koji uses certificates to authenticate the users to do builds, to log into the web interface, to, you know, do all of that stuff. We provide the setup so that you can use those same certificates and to do stuff on the secondary architectures. So that you can do your builds there. You can go into the web interface, cancel a build, do scratch builds, help out where you can. And so we provide that same, that authentication mechanism. We provide packages. So hopefully, hopefully all of the Fedora packages will help with all the architectures. It's not going to happen with all of them, but a lot of them will help with the secondary architecture. So, Fedora also provides a framework in which, which everybody works. We have put in place policies for, gaining access to be able to commit to CVS. We have, have the framework to be able to work as an open source project. And most of that stuff, it's a big benefit to, rather than going off and doing your own architecture, by yourself on the side somewhere, Fedora provides the framework so that you can much easily get that, architecture up, running, and, supported without having to provide a lot of additional, stuff that doesn't affect actually building packages, getting, source trees together, getting the distribution out. Fedora provides best practice guidelines, packaging, the system admin team's there to help with issues if you have, database backups, how to set up the systems, how to set up the sandbox systems, how to get the build system up and running. Fedora has guidelines and policies on how to do all of that, so that's there for you, for someone to take advantage of. And the release engineering tools and the support for that. So Fedora has a release engineering team that is built up of both Red Hat employees and community people that are involved in the Fedora community. All the tools that are used to build Fedora are completely free and open source. Everything's released under, I think they're all LGPL and GPL. So they're all available there for everybody to use, and the release team is, going to support the secondary architecture teams with those tools and getting things up and working out, weird issues with adding support for new architectures. Some architectures like ARM are not going to use all of those tools. So they're not going to have an Anaconda installable image because most ARM systems are very small and, they're going to have to come up with some of their own tools for that. But, for most architectures, there's, the tools are there and the support. So what we're doing is really helping make it easy to get your own distribution up. And we're saying you can call it Fedora because you're using everything from Fedora, and it's completely community supported. And that's where just trying to be. So there's some existing Fedora tools that we use in doing secondary architectures. The main tool that we use is Koji. Koji is the Fedora build system. I don't know if anybody or everybody knows how Koji works, but Koji has a bunch of tags, and you build the packages into the tags. And all the tags use inheritance, so that Fedora 8 inherits from, or Fedora 9 inherits from Fedora 8, Fedora 10 inherits from Fedora 9. So that if you build something only ever in Fedora 8, it's still available in Fedora 10 through inheritance, so that the packages go all the way through. Koji helps with making the lifecycle manageable in that you build to it. Koji has tags and targets. You build to the target, which says this is the tag that we build from, and the resulting builds, the RPM packages, we put them into this other tag. So that updates get through a tag cycle. When they're signed, they get tagged into the updates tag and made available to the build group. And it's a very very controlled environment. Koji keeps track of all the packages that were in the build group. It keeps track of who set the build, the URL that was built, that was used. Every single aspect of the build logs are kept. So that, ideally you should be able to reproduce any build at any time by saying, this is my build group, make it for me, and you can build your package in it, and it should be identical every time. Kodjoo takes advantage of existing open source tools with Mock and Yum to create a minimal Turo environment, and then installs the dependencies into it, and then builds against that. So every single build is done in a completely new environment that is completely clean, so that you don't accidentally get unwanted dependencies in there, because we had package foo in here, which provided some resource that we took advantage of. So this build had support for this, but when we rebuild it, we didn't have foo in there, and we don't have support for foo anymore. There's a few components of Kodjoo. The main one is the Kodjoo Hub, which is the XML RPC interface that all communication goes through. It uses MudPython and Apache. The builders send their requests. Kodjoo D is the builder daemon. It sends its request and says, is there any builds? And continues to do that through the XML RPC interface. The hub is the only thing that talks to the database directly, and is the only thing that can write directly to the file system where the packages live. And it's just part of ensuring that everything is fully controlled. The hub itself is is a dumb hub. It's only when a call is made to it to do something. So it's, everything else is done actively except for the hub. And then you have the web and Kodjoo Web and the CLI, which is the interface to see package status, builds, what was in the build route, what was the resulting binaries, what was the log file, work out why did something fail. You can get the logs from primary hub and a secondary hub and compare them and see, we had a different version, or we had whatever was different and that caused the fail. Failure to happen. Hopefully that won't happen, but you never know. So another existing tool that we use is MASH. It speaks to Kodjoo and says, give me all the latest packages for this tag, and then writes out onto the file system the tree that, like the rawhide tree that's built every night. MASH builds it, it writes the file system out. It resolves multi-lib so that if there's different multi-lib policies. So if the multi-lib policy says anything that has a develop package gets put into this repo, like for x86 and x86-64, it does all the handling, sets it up, runs create repo, gives you something that you can then use Yum against to install additional packages. Then Pungy takes the output of MASH and creates the spins and the installable ISOs. Pungy's the compose tool that's used to create installable images. It's also a set of Python libraries that you can build other tools on top of. For example, Revisor, which is a GUI tool that you can use to create your own custom version of Fedora. It steps you through selecting the packages, working out, and it uses Anaconda in the back end to create installable ISO images that you can have DVD or CD, write some out. So there's the compose tool. And then there's Live CD Tools, which creates the Live CD images. The Live CD Tools works by installing packages into a Turo, converts the tree into the bootable ISO, and it uses kickstart files as its configuration. So you feed into a kickstart file, it goes through and says, we're going to install all these packages, do all these steps, and at the end you get an image that is installable. Live CD image that's runnable and installable. So of all these tools, we need some new tools to be able to make the whole secondary architecture concept work. And that tool is Kodjoo SD. It's a subscriber daemon. It monitors the primary hub and says, do we have any new builds? And gets back, using the XML RPC interface on the Kodjoo hub, gets back and says, yeah, we've got, these are all the builds. And then it queues the builds in order on the secondary hub, monitors to make sure that if this particular version of ZoolRunner was in the build route, that we have at least that version in there. There's going to be times where build things fail because they just plain fail on that architecture. So you want to ensure that you always have at least the same or a newer version. You know, you fix the bugs, submit an update to Fedora, CVS, boot on the primary hub, gets built down the secondary hub, and then the other things that are needed by that can get, you know, built on top of that. So the, and then things like on a secondary architecture, no packages shouldn't need to be rebuilt on the secondary architecture, because the idea of a OAuth package is that it's completely architecture, you know, and the architecture has no impact at all on it actually working. So those, you know, a configurable option is to import them, so that for use cases like a secondary architecture, you can import just the OAuth packages. But if you're doing something like having a project that builds things on top of Fedora, you might want to import all of the architecture packages so that you have available in your local Koji everything as it was built to build on top of. So that's the, you know, the goal of Koji SD. So the secondary architecture teams, right now we have an ARM team, an Alpha team, a Tanium team, PPC, which is just doing release engineering, it's a special case, S390 and Spark. All of them are currently in different stages of getting ramped up. Itanium released a Fedora 9 release last week or the week before. The Spark tree, we've got about 3/4 of it built. We've had, you know, like issues with getting things up and running. Because of the way Koji works, for the first time ever, we're having to build every single package Spark 64, which user line, traditionally on Spark, it works a lot like PPC. You run a 32-bit user land even on 64-bit hardware, because there's not really any benefit to running, you know, 64-bit.
There is one.
The one is if you've got a big database that needs lots of memory, more than 4 gig per, you know, process. That's the only time that you really get a benefit for, you know, running Spark 64. But we're having to, you know, build up. Some of the other issues that we've had to work through is we now have OpenJDK built for Spark 64 Linux, which there's never been a proper Java for Spark 64 Linux in ever.
Wonderful irony.
We now have one. So there's things that slow down the ramp up of getting a new architecture up, but once it's up, it should be very easy to keep it in sync and keep it running, and it's just a matter of fixing build failures, and hopefully they're, you know, very far and few in between. And doing release engineering, QA, and that kind of stuff on your tree. So, another advantage or a side effect of all this work that's been going on is that it makes it fairly easy to lay a product on top of Fedora. You know, if you have, for instance, LibNode builds packages for Fedora that are not acceptable to Fedora for whatever reason, using like Koji SD, they can suck the packages in as they're built on the primary architectures and use a trigger mechanism so that, you know, the kernel modules get rebuilt when a new kernel is built while it is, you know, an update candidate package, so that when Fedora then releases that, they can simultaneously release their build and do, you know, pre Q&A before it's actually released and ensure that, you know, it's available quicker and sooner to the end user. And so future work that is going on in Koji is going to make it even easier. And we're, you know, looking at adding things to Koji, like using external repos, using parent Koji service, so that rather than importing all of this data into your Koji, you just say, what's the latest repo for this tag? It gives you the repo information, you suck the metadata in, and then you pull the packages straight from, you know, the upstream to your Koji instance to, you know, give you, you know, more flexibility and lower the barrier to actually building stuff on top of it. So that's my talk. Questions? Yeah.
Are there any attempts to make Fedora capable of doing cross builds?
Cross-building is not something that Fedora is actively looking at doing in any way, shape, or form. Cross-building tool chains, we're adding, there's discussion at the moment on what it's going to take to be able to add cross, you know, cross field tool chains. And there's people that want, the guys that do infer, they want to have in Fedora the MinGW, you know, tool chain so that they can build Windows binaries for the Winvert stuff.
I also want that for not for Windows binaries, but anyway.
But
I need it for other reasons.
And there's other reasons why you can do it, but Fedora, one of the things that we've laid out with secondary architectures is that everything needs to be natively built. We're not doing cross-compile support, but there's no reason. We have a particular ARM cross-tool chain in Fedora, and there's no reason why we can't have all the different cross-build tool chains so that you can do that for yourself, but it's not something that Fedora is actively looking to support.
That doesn't mean we don't want it. That means we're not looking at it.
If someone wanted to do the work,
yes,
they could
then we'd be looking at it.
Actually, I may be able to make the work irrelevant because a project I work on is aimed at making cross-compiling go away. Mm-hmm. It builds its own cross-compiler, uses that to create a minimal native development environment that you can then boot under QEMU. Mm-hmm. And
yes, that's actually probably more like what we should do.
Yeah, it's essentially a Linux from scratch system, and what it also does is to accelerate it a little bit. It uses distcc to call out to the cross compiler to make it only painfully slow rather than unusably slow. But it's still, as far as all packages are concerned, they don't need to be cross compiler aware because it is building natively as far as everything's concerned. But this is not a Fedora environment. This is pretty much a Linux from scratch environment. And what I was hoping to get out of this is, how do I go from a Linux from scratch environment with an existing native toolchain to build Fedora? I don't know what the bootstrapping from a non-Fedora environment into a Fedora environment is. And if Fedora insists on rebuilding its own toolchain, we lose the distcc acceleration thing.
So the way that Fedora builds all of its packages is in the minimal tuner. There's no reason why that minimal tuner couldn't be in a QEMU guest that it's built against. The one thing you'd need to get is set up you need to get RPM built and work on, you know, using from that, using the Fedora packages and what you've got, build up to an instance where you have everything built, and then once you've got everything built, you can import your RPMs into the Koji, and then, you know, work on from there and build on top of that once you've got the environment built up.
As you go about this offline.
Okay. Yes, sir.
My experience is that building Fedora from scratch in a non-Fedora environment is a nightmare. There are lots of circular dependencies between packages. There are dependencies on certain built environment packages. It's basically a really nightmare.
It's not an easy thing to do, but it is doable. And once you've done it once, you've got it there, and then you build on top of that. There's an initial cost in getting the environment up. You know, one thing that the Itanium guys did initially to get a Itanium environment up was used Alien and converted the Debian packages from .debs to RPMs, and that gave them an RPM base to start building from, and then they built, you know, the Fedora tool chain up and built everything up from there. But they, you know, they used the, you know, devs with Alien to, as a, you know, as a building block to build upon.
If I can just add, building in mock is the recommended way to build all packages for Fedora. And if you're building packages targeting Fedora, not using mock, yes, you have the ability to introduce all sorts of odd, unresolvable dependencies. Mock being pointed at the clean build trees for a given distribution release means that all the dependency resolution gets handled at build time and not at runtime when things may have changed.
Yeah, but that doesn't help.
There
is
some circular dependency chains in the tree. Gnome has some circular dependencies. Perl's got 3 or 4 different circular dependencies. And one thing that I've been trying to do as I've been going through and doing the Spark packages and getting them built up is making sure that there's proper macros in the spec file so that you can say, well, you know, for a minimal build or for, you know, for getting things up to speed, you change this macro, define it. It then builds it minus whatever dependency it is, so that you can then build the other package and then rebuild the first package, so that you solve the chain, you know, through a clean way. You know, it's fairly easy to do. Yes, sir.
We did similar thing for OpenSUSE, and we found out that most of the circular dependencies are packaging bugs that you have to split packages and everything like that. So we cleaned up a lot of stuff, I guess, that would be doable for Fedora.
Yeah, there's a bunch of circular dependencies in like the Ant and Maven and Java toolchains. That's really, really, really messy to build. And it's getting better. As more people do it and more of those issues get documented, that makes it easier for the people that come after to, you know, bring up a new architecture or go up and do something slightly different with the tree that they want to do. Or if somebody just has the inclination that they want to rebuild Fedora from scratch because they think it would be fun to do it. The groundwork for that is getting done, and it's slowly getting better. It's certainly not perfect, and it's not very easy right now. But it's much easier now than when we did Aurora for Spark, you know, based on Fedora 3 and Fedora Core 6. When we started rebuilding, you know, Fedora Core 6 for Spark, we had all sorts of nightmares and in doing stuff. And as we were hitting those, especially once Fedora was merged and everything was done in the open using open source tools, it's much easier for people to go, oh, this is a bug, and, you know, we fix it. One thing that the secondary Arch team members get is full access to all of CVX so that they can fix any packages that they need to. And they, you know, you can fix those things by defining macros and documenting the steps needed to, you know, build it up from nothing.
Are any of these secondary arches dealing with sub-architectures inside of themselves? So like
Spark is a mess with sub-architectures. So Spark has
five,
Spark,
six.
There's the 32-bit Spark and the 64-bit Spark. There's two variants of 64-bit Spark. There's
three-ish.
Probably going to be a third variant soon.
Four-ish.
Yeah, four-ish.
The V9.
Interleaving
subset.
And then in the 32-bit, there's Spark V7, which is really ancient 32-bit, Spark V8, Spark V9, Spark V9B, which is the Niagara stuff, and there's going to be Spark V9 V2, which is the Niagara 2. So there's a bunch of different sub-architectures. And right now we're building everything for Spark, only Spark V9, so that we're not supporting 32-bit Spark hardware anymore, but because the user land is better off being, for the user, better off being 32-bit, we're building a full 32-bit tree and a full 64-bit tree. ARM is probably going to have some sub-architecture stuff as well, because there's so many different variants of ARM. Alpha there isn't. S390 is building two variants. There's S390 and S390X, which is a 31-bit and 64-bit environment.
I mean, the reason I ask is I do PowerPC work, and I asked about getting the compiler to support soft floating point again in the latest, I guess, 4.09 land. The soft floating point multi-limb support went away, and pretty much kind of got shot down on it. But a lot of the embedded PowerPC architectures don't have floating point hardware, so there's an interest in having, you know, from an embedded point of view, you know, packages that aren't dealing with native floating point.
Sure.
Yeah, so you can just turn on mapping image.
Yeah, but there's some reasons you don't want to do that.
Well, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, of course you do. Okay, I didn't see the problem.
Yeah, I mean, you can. I agree.
I mean, you can do it as a start to convince the compiler packagers that, yes, it really is needed.
And I guess that's the question, right, is about, I mean, what's the mechanism in the community to try to get that? I mean,
for something like that, if the maintainer's like not doing it, then what you really need to do is take the case to Fezco and say, we have all this, you know, PPC hardware that doesn't have a hardware floating point. We would like to get this added to the tool chain and, you know, get Fezco to the engineering steering committee, get them to resolve that issue and work on that issue and come to some kind of a solution. And so, yeah, that would be the way to do that. And, you know, work out, well, what are the objections from the maintainers? Is it just because they have not dealt with that hardware and they don't really realize that it's a big problem? Or, you know, a lot of the issues that we've had, especially with the Spark stuff, is just user education. Most of the users have never had to deal with, you know, when Fedora, you know, merged and we started building everything for PPC 64. A lot of people kind of were like, what's this 64 big endian? You know, a lot of people were kind of confused by it. They've not had to deal with it, so a lot of it is, you know, educating that, you know, this is how it works in this environment, and, you know, working out the best way to, you know, deal with that.
And having some dedicated people for dealing with the breakage.
Sure, yeah.
So that not every one of the several hundred Fedora packages has to be cognizant of all architectures and implementation details.
Yeah. So one of the tasks of the secondary architecture team is to educate other Fedora people on intricacies of that particular architecture. You know, they're supposed to be the experts on that architecture, so when there's some weird architecture specific bugs, that's part of what they're there for.
Yeah. Do you have any idea of the level of investment that would be required to provide a full cross-build environment?
Not really. One thing that you'd need to do would be to teach Yum how to be able to resolve dependencies for the non-native architecture. Because you need to teach mock how to do it.
It's harder than that. That won't really work. Because you've got the case where the host CPU and the builder are different. Mm-hmm. If it's the Canadian cross,
yeah,
then that can't help you. You've got to rebuild it you've got to build in the root.
Mm-hmm. I actually used to work for a company called TimeSys that for a while their core business was porting Fedora to various other target architectures. They pretty much did this up till about Fedora 5. They had a wrapper around the RPM command that was this evil monstrosity written in Perl. We kept waiting for it to become sentient and bring Skynet online. It was horrible. They had a team of about 20 people work on this for 3 or 4 years, and they were pretty much playing whack-a-mole, just trying to keep up. It is, cross-compiling is every package bit rots with every new release.
Sure.
It's horrible.
So probably the easiest way, if you need to do cross-compiling, is add support to like QEMU.
Yeah, do it.
Do it with the architecture and do it with native.
Project that does that.
That's probably really the easiest way to do it, is build a native under a virtualized environment. That way, you know, if the hardware in question is slow, you know, 25 megahertz, and, you know, it isn't very powerful, you can likely get a much more powerful build environment by having it virtualized.
Some other advantages of virtualization is you don't have limited memory, you don't have limited storage, you're not trying to build on NFS, which is painful, and you also don't have to schedule access to a limited amount of hardware.
Yep. That's probably the easiest way to do it, is to actually virtualize that environment and do it natively. But, you know, there's definitely no reason why cross-compile tool chains can't be in Fedora so that you can build your one or two packages. If you want to do an old distribution, yeah, it's probably better working out how can I do it natively. Any more questions?